So is everybody ready for the annual report then? Okay. So I am Arnie Hinden, and I am the director of the AVSL. And there is my email address in case you haven't ever seen me on any discussion group or anything like that. I mean, you can read it off from here. And so some of this is combined with what I gave in the spring. And the reason is that not very many AVSO people who are here today also were up in Calgary. So excuse if you were in both places and you see some commonality between some of the slides. And as Mike Saladiga mentioned last night, this is really a passing of the air from going from this 25 Birch address to our new digs in this building. And so this is a picture of the sale of the 25 Birch Street headquarters, and you can see that the two lawyers are smiling. They're the ones who are getting the checks. And David signed, I think, about 25 times his name. I'm glad that he can. His hand has recovered since then. And then this was the purchase of 49 Bay State with Susan Litt, who's the president of the corporation, Fornax Corporation, that actually owned these three buildings. And so I had to sign my name a few times, but not the number of times that David did, which was a relief. And so this is our building. This is a untouched up picture, but it needs some work. So we're getting there. The things that I don't like on the exterior are this sort of lime green color that's here, this early container siding, a chain link fence that was put in 1949 and shows the rust and equivalent thereof. And one interesting thing is you see this tree here. If you were here last night, you'll see the earlier version of that tree not long after it was planted. And it's a great tree. It just throws all kinds of shade in the summer. And so we really like having this tree and then being able to have this grass here that the staff can go out and have lunches and so on. So this is a dramatic improvement over the 25 Birch address. And as the treasurer reported, it was the best time possible to be able to buy this building. And so I think it was a good trade. So here are some pictures of us cleaning up the inside. The inside was, I wouldn't call it trashed, but Sky Telescope moved out in a hurry. And so we had a few things to clean up and patch up and paint up. And so the volunteers that came out in January and February, terrible time of the year to be coming out for this kind of stuff, but they really came out and helped out enormously. So this is a picture of our old library as we got it packed up. This is downstairs as we were getting things packed. And then, again, more boxes here. You can see Elizabeth, I think, is back in here somewhere. Yep, she's back there. So you can see that not only was it crowded when everything was in their proper file cabinets, but once we started adding 600 containers of things in 1,000 boxes, it suddenly filled to the ceiling. We had three moving trucks. And again, this is February, and you notice there's no snow on the ground. So I think global warming has arrived in Boston. But that was good because I would have hated to have had to try to move things when it was completely frozen. And so we had three trucks that pulled up to 25 Birch, loaded up, drove around the block to 49 Bay State, and unloaded. One-way street. And then, of course, some of the scenes from the moving of the sign, some unpacking that was taking place, some later stages of the unpacking. So now you can start seeing the archive area and the library over here starting to look more like they do today. And everything went smoothly. It's just that it is a complication to move from one building to another, especially when you've been living in one spot for 20 years and gathering an enormous amount of paper and other stuff. So all I can do is compliment the staff on their amount of effort and ingenuity in getting this move to take place. It was really great. But we come to the other area of this, and that is fundraising. We did take money out of the endowment. Now, granted, it's still in it. We ended up with a building which is an asset to the association, but it means that that money is no longer available for producing income. And the income from the endowment and the Ford Fund are what we do most of our business with, as far as staff salaries, operating expenses, building utilities, and everything else. So we really need to replenish that. And so you have a need to replenish the income-producing funds. As I mentioned before, there's some things that still have to be done to the exterior of the building. And every member should consider donating to our building fund to support the organization. And so there will be a new continued drive for that building fund, and you'll hear more about that in the coming weeks. And we can handle monthly recurring payments on MasterCharge and Visa if you don't want to do it all in lump sum, and there'll be more information on our webpage as well. So it's a semi-dirty thing to do, but at the same time, you see what we've gained by moving here. It's just a great facility, and so we really do need to pay it back. All right, so let me start in on some of the things related to the organization and what's happened over the last year. And I wanted to start just by showing what one person does over a period of a year. And so this is from Kate Davis. So she helped in getting the Variable Star Plotter up on the web and released. She's made the RSS feed available for people who want that kind of access. She helped in placing the photoelectric tools up in WebOBS. She's worked with Travis in getting the membership renewal process automated. The My Newsflash profiles have been updated. She's done a lot of web stuff as far as education and public outreach, which I will have to change. The shopping carts, because of the new MasterCard Visa, all have to be changed, and it was an enormous amount of effort to do that. The donations, renewals are now handled all through PayPal as opposed to our original contractor, and is, I think, a much cleaner way of doing it. And then things like the automated, whenever you update your membership, pay your dues, then that automatically propagates down to our membership database and has removed considerable amount of manual labor that was involved in membership renewals. She's done internal pages for the staff to do automated sending of alert and special notices, so now those go out much cleaner in a standardized format. And then all the homepage articles and the History Channel links and everything else that takes place. And she was going to school at the same time. So it just shows that every staff member, and this is just highlighting one, has been extremely productive over the past year and does a lot of things behind the scenes that you don't get to see. And so I've been very impressed with them, and it's a great staff to work with. As was mentioned by Gary, we had a large number of annual observations this year. There was 896,000 CCD observations, but there are also 759,000 visual observations. Now, the typical visual observation total is about 400,000 per year. This one was bumped up this year because of mainly two events. The first of those was the A.W. Roberts project that we've been having with the South African group to digitize and get his important turn-of-the-century observations into our database. that gives us a lot of southern stars, fills in their light curves that we didn't have before. And the other one is from Albert Jones and also from the RSMZ database itself. Albert Jones' data, I think, was in the order of 300,000 observations or something like that that got uploaded into our database. And then, of course, Sarah and Matt and others have been working on getting the photoelectric observations reprocessed and into our database, and so almost 27,000 of those have been put into the database as well. So the totals were 1.7 million observations that we recorded this year. And if you look at the observation totals, here are two graphs. The one on the left is the annual observation totals. The one on the right is our standard megastep plot, which shows the total number of observations that are stored in our database. And so you can see from the annual observations that it's an exponential increase, and that if you notice, the last date on there is 2010. And that's because in 2011, we disintegrate. We should be getting something in the order of 1 billion observations a year, according to this plot. So if you want to come and volunteer at headquarters over the next couple of years, you know, it might help. And then the megasteps, we're up to a little over 15 million observations in our database. And that, like I said, is growing at over 1 million observations a year. And I don't see that slowing down in the near future. I just see it increasing. And so this is one of the real aspects that we're doing behind the scenes, is trying to automate and make things efficient so we can handle this enormous flood of data that's coming into the AVSO. And it's great. Keep it coming. But we just need to find ways of handling it better. So a couple web features that I like, and there's tons of them on the web. If you just go through every year, you can see new things. The two of them that showed up recently were that you can get a total count of the observations that we have in our database. And you really ought to do this. If you haven't done it, you ought to do it, because if you think that you have 24,900 observations and we only have 24,800 observations recorded, then somewhere along the line there's a discrepancy, and we would like to clean it up and make sure that what you think you've submitted to the AVSO is exactly what we have recorded in our records. And so look at this. If it doesn't match your totals, then maybe you can download all your observations, which is another feature of this, and just do a double check. And if you do the check, then we don't have to do the check. It saves our time. So if you can, that would be great. As far as the website is concerned, here's a graph of the total data that's transferred on our website in gigabytes. And you can see that per month, there's an enormous amount of activity that's taking place. There are certain peaks that occur, and one of those was sort of January, February, and I have a feeling that that's kind of related to our move. If I were to guess, I would say that we probably changed IP addresses, and maybe the bots decided to consider us a new feature and download more data or something. But anyway, the main thing is that we do have a large transfer of data that takes place every month from the AVSO. It's close, and I think I have a plot of that so we can look at it and see. But I don't think that was the important thing in this particular case. Here's an example of the data download request. So these are people who actually go to the AVSO website and fill out the form that says, I want data on this particular star. This is my name. This is what I'm trying to do with that star. And you can see that we had 8,400 of those kinds of requests this year. Now, a large number of those are students. Some of those are, you know, professional astronomers. But it's still, these are people who actually went and got extensive data on a particular star, not just the ones who were doing a light curve or something like that of the star. Now, you notice that the one in August is a huge hit, and that's because we had one high school student who, for some project, wanted to look at our entire database. And I don't think he succeeded, because I think he only had 2,700 stars that he downloaded. but it's still a significant number of stars that he really spent a lot of time on our website to get this data. And it also caused a fair amount of concern from our IT staff because he got bored as he went through and downloaded data and started to use some very interesting names instead of his own personal name. And because of that, it looked very much like somebody was hacking into the site and doing things that they shouldn't be doing, and so we just wanted to check out and you know, see if we could prevent that from happening in the future, and then we find out that it's an honest-to-goodness person. So it's still, even without his downloading, it's still an impressive number of people who've gone to our sites and asked for our data. That's just the number, you know, I told you the number of gigabytes that were being transferred. These are just the number of hits per month, and it's this distinct host, so it's actually distinct people that have downloaded data from the AVSO, sort of in the order of 40,000 a month. Homepage hits, again, it's people who come into the homepage and then go on elsewhere. And they're, most of the observers actually have internal pages bookmarked. So this doesn't tell you how many observers have touched our web page. Just tells you how many people have entered through the front, the homepage. And so this is everything except the homepage. So it's 50,000 hits or something like that on the homepage. And now you're talking 300,000 hits once you get down to other pages such as WebObs and so on. So people have things bookmarked. So these are the sort of the observer totals. These are the people who have gone in and have accessed things underneath the homepage. And now this is the VSP stuff. This is the variable star plotter. And you can see that we sort of started introducing the variable star plotter in sort of the February-March timeframe of this past year. And then in June at the RESC meeting, we did a formal announcement of the variable star plotter and the fact that it was now available to plot any of the AVSO stars. And at that time, you see this enormous increase in the number of page requests per month. So it's on the order of 8,000 plots that were getting downloaded right after that point. And now, since in October, we announced that the comparison star database was now incorporated in the variable star plotter, and so you have all kinds of nice new photometry. Those numbers come in October and November, and so they don't show up on this plot, but I think you'll see a huge increase at that point because a lot of people started downloading charts. So the photoelectric news, we have online data input, 36,000 observations have been reprocessed and are online, and there have been a couple campaigns that have been introduced, and there are a couple more that will be coming up this next fiscal year. And so this is the online form for entering raw data for the photoelectric group. And here is some of the photoelectric data that are now online. The stuff in green is the photoelectric observations, and of course the stuff in black are the visual observations. A lot of these are very low amplitude stars, so the visual observations almost are insufficient to resolve the very small variations that occur in the star, at least at this binning scale. But you can see how well the photoelectric observations not only match the visual observations, but also extend the visual observations and show the finer details of the star's variability. Here's another one, RS Cancri. And you can see that the visual observations actually do a very nice job of showing some of the oscillations of the star. But the photoelectric stuff really highlights it. And it's a marvelous set of data that's now available, and we hope to extend that in the future. So for the visual observers, though, we also are supporting you guys. We've had several issues with the eyepiece views. GOMS has been very good at that. Goes out, I think, what, every 2 months or something? Bimonthly. And then, of course, there the A.W. Roberts and Albert Jones observations I mentioned earlier have now been merged into the database, or at least are being started to. I think there's still some Jones stuff that's outstanding. And then, of course, to me, the highlight has been the fact that MIRA not only had this bright maximum that occurred this past year, but also the marvelous tail that was reported yesterday from GALAX. So this is the bright maximum from MIRA, and of course, as all these things happen to do, it's just before it goes behind the sun. And so you can see it comes down here, and then almost no observations at this point. It's not that the observers quit observing, it's the fact that it disappeared in the west. But even so, it reached a maximum of around a visual magnitude of 2, which is quite extreme. So it's really nice to be able to highlight that. And then this is the famous GALAX picture. For scale, from here over to there is about 2 degrees in the sky. And so this is, if you look at it in great detail, this is a composite image of multiple images from GALAX. And that tail is 13 light years long from there to there. And at MIRA's pace through our sky, that's about 30,000 years of its existence. And so you can see that it's losing a lot of mass right now, but it's lost mass in episodic behavior in prior years. But it's just you think that you know everything there is about a bright star, and then you get something like this. And it just shows that you cannot just you can't assume that even a bright star won't show you something new. So the A.W. Roberts data that I mentioned earlier, he was a South African observer who observed basically for about 30 years. And he had 70,000 observations of close to 100 stars. These were all southern, very southern stars, which we didn't have a whole lot of data in our database, and so we were happy to work with the South African group and get them merged into our database. 46,000 of those observations were submitted by Tim Cooper and his father, and the remainder are being digitized and submitted by the Astronomical Society of South Africa. And so those will all be coming online very shortly, and they're just a great set of data. And the other one is the RSNZ database, of which there's about 1.6 million observations, and they gave those to us last year, and we've been looking at them and seeing how to merge them into our database. Part of the problem is that many of the observers not only submitted data to the RESNZ, but also submitted data to us. And so there's duplicates. And so we have to come up with ways of making sure that observations are only recorded once. And the biggest contributor from that 1.6 million observation database is Albert Jones, with almost 360,000 observations. And then Mike has been working very hard on getting those observations into our database. And so Sarah was nice enough to give us some plots showing you some of the southern stars. The data that we have in our database from other observers, and then the same star with Albert Jones's contributions incorporated. So this is RSTEL, and the black dots are observations from mostly southern observers that we have in our database, and the red dots are fainter than observations. So these are all going to be visual observations. Red dots are fainter than, black dots are validated data points. And so that's what it looks like after you add Albert Jones. And so you can see that he is a major contributor as far as data is concerned. And here's another example, RS Loopy. And that's without. And that's with. And not only notice that he's extended the light coverage of these stars, but his observations are extremely accurate at the same time. So it's a combination win-win situation. And Ticha. Without, you notice there's quite a number of fainter-than observations there, and that's with. So So just a measly 12,000 observations on this star. It would sure be nice to have 100 Albert Joneses. T-Pix, which is one of Bill Dylan's favorite stars. That's without Albert. That's with Albert. And this is during the outburst that took place, when was this? 1967 or something like that. And so he was the one that sort of filled in what happened after the thing started to fade. So CCD, observing news. The biggest one for me, and the one that I worked on quite a bit, is getting the variable star database, the comparison star database, into VSP. And so we added about 22,000 stars with reasonably accurate photometry. All V-band observations in that 22,000, and then about half of those stars have multiple filter observations, so they're good for CCD observers. There have been new tools that have been added to the website, and then, of course, Aaron ran an SSSIG campaign for a little over a year, and those results have now been, they were submitted to AJ, and I think that, or PASP, excuse me, and that has been accepted, right? December issue. And so if you were part of that campaign, you should be proud of yourselves. It's a beautiful database, and we're going to continue to data mine that data set and get out some more analysis papers from it. This is one that Doug Welch commented on. This is the eclipsing Cepheid that's in our own galaxy. So this is a finding chart of it, and it's circled in red, so it's a really easy star to find. These are two light curves from the Discovery paper showing basically the pulsational period of the star and then folded on the eclipsing binary light period so that you can see what kind of an eclipsing system it is. This is some of the data that we took from Senoida on this particular star. And so the large amplitude here is the pulsational amplitude, and you can see there's sort of an envelope here in which you can actually see the eclipsing binary part of the star as well. And so you have to, when you have something like this, it's a complicated mess in order to deconvolve the two sets of observations. So this is just data from Senoida. We've gotten a lot of data in from other observers, and they just have to be merged and zero-pointed and everything else. And so it'll be a while before we get the data out, but now the observing season is finished, and so we can actually do something with it. And then Matt told us on the High Energy Network news about Arto Oksanen's discovery of the afterglow, and so we have to give out our second discovery award of an afterglow. So that will be happening in this next month or so. And then there's also sort of under the high energy end of things are two campaigns that are ongoing, the Blazar campaign that Matt talked about, and also a high mass X-ray binary campaign for Gordon Sardi. So let me give you some variable star highlights. I did a little bit of this in April. It's always fun to see the things that appear on the IU circulars and what the amateurs themselves mention on various discovery discussion group postings. There were six new novae this past year, with the last one being V390 NOR. The eclipsing Cepheid that I mentioned, lots and lots of transiting exoplanets. GW Lib decided to go into outburst. Last year was RS Ophiuchi, so I mean, you know, we're doing well. But it's only going to increase. These are rare outbursts. They occur maybe every 20 or 30 years from some of these stars. And as the surveys find more and more variable stars, the number of these rare beasts will increase. The fraction in the total will not change, but instead of having a half dozen, you're going to have 60 or 100. And now all of a sudden that means that one of these is going to be going off every year. And so the number of stars that you get to cover will increase. And it's only going to, it never goes in the opposite direction. So we mentioned the eclipse of V838 Mon, which took place last November. It actually looks like it's in eclipse again as this observing season starts. So it's going to be an interesting setup. We don't know really whether it's an eclipse of one of the two stars in the system or whether it's dust clouds that are obscuring the B star. And so there's a lot of papers that are currently out in press, and I think there'll be more. This new WZ Sagittarius star, V455 Andromeda, which is also an interesting star because it's also a pulsator, and there's all kinds of neat new periods that are going on in it, and so it's nice to have it pop up brightly so that you could get high time resolution photometry of it. And then there are two naked eye comets, and so I don't always deal with variable stars. If I see something interesting in the sky, I look at it too. So here are nine of the more recent novae. And so these are sort of, the one up here I think is sort of 2004-ish. So you're looking at sort of 2 to 3 years worth of data on novae. And these are the light curves that have been submitted to the AVSO. And you can see that we're actually starting to cover some of these nova very well with high resolution time series photometry, as well as good visual observations, not only of the initial stages of the outburst, but also later on. And you can see that of these nine, there might be two that look the same, and all the others have peculiar features to them. And so this kind of data is necessary for the researchers to understand the novae phenomena and what's going on, whether it's a slow nova like this or one of these fast novae. So they're really fun things. And so we had some comets. And so this is a picture that was taken by Walter McDonald up in Canada. And so this is 17P Holmes. And you can see that it was a very unusual comet. It's still up there. It's still second magnitude, I believe. And the moon is going away. So if the hurricane goes away too, you can actually start looking at it. But that's probably the most unusual comet I've ever seen. And I've looked at a lot. Comet McNaught, which we got to see just before it went behind the sun here, just over Fresh Pond, I think last January. And then this is from Patagonia down in South America as it came around the other side. And you can see that not only is it a pretty comet by itself, and the tail basically stretched across the sky, but you also have, you know, basically three galaxies in this picture with the large, small, and Magellanic clouds and the Milky Way all showing up at the same time. This is just a fantastic picture. I want this as my screensaver. Yep. Okay, a couple other things. We were hoping to get the new submission formats in place before this meeting. It's been a little delayed, but they will come out within a week or two. There's two formats. One's a visual format, so it's very much like the visual format that we currently have, except that we're extending it. We're allowing long object names to be submitted to the AVSO. You can do the SDSSJ0745 and continue it on as many digits as you want, and that's fine. The other thing is that we're not going to require the Harvard designation anymore. And so you won't have to wait for a Harvard designation to be created for a particular new object. You can submit data on it as long as it's in VSX. And we're condensing the number of comet codes down to a more reasonable level. I think sometimes we just kept adding comet codes for special circumstances, and we want to bring it down to something that's a little bit more reasonable for the visual observers. Then there'll be a second format, which we call the extended format, and this one is really designed for software vendors. It's not designed for you to fill in. And the reason that we bring in this one out is because every photometric package that's out there has its own output format. And so AIP for WIN, Maxim, Myra, you name it, has its own little peculiar format that Kate has been good enough to support on WebObs for data for batch input. And the thing is that every time, not only do we have multiple software vendors, but every time that the software vendor changes to a new version, it changed the format. And so it's just a big headache as far as headquarters is concerned. And so what we have done is worked with all the major software vendors and proposed a standardized format for submitting CCD data, and they have all agreed to support that format. So that will be coming online very shortly, and we're having test files coming back from the various software vendors so we can make sure that we are in agreement as to how the fields are named and placed in that particular file. It also will allow ensemble photometry too, so you can all get back to that. So this is the WebOBS visual format page, and you can see that, again, it looks very much like our old one. It's just that things like the star identifier now, you can stick in really long names. You can stick in the Harvard designation too if that star particularly has it, but you don't have to. And then this is the CCD or extended format. And again, it's very similar to what we had before, except that there are a number of additional fields for check stars and the magnitude types, whether it's ensemble or differential photometry and so on. And so, again, this is something where, yes, you could enter it one at a time through this form, but most likely it'll be created by your own software package, much like the asteroid position format is for the Minor Planet Center. Okay. So, as I said before, not only can you submit through WebOBS with extended names, but you can use any name that's currently existing in VSX. So there are 140,000 stars in VSX, plus or minus. And you can submit data to the AVSO for any one of those stars, and it doesn't end up as a 9999 plus 99, where it requires resolution by a staff person to figure out what the star is, stick it in our validation file, and be able to submit it. So the idea is to make it automated in that if you have a new star that you want to submit data to the AVSO, we're giving you the tools to do that. And then again, this is kind of going online in November. And I said in about a week, but there's a lot of things that I've mentioned that are going online in about a week. And so which week, I am not really sure. But it will happen, and it will happen soon. As also mentioned by Gary, there is one robotic telescope that the AVSO is a partner of right now, which is the Sonoida Research Observatory. It's a C-14 on a Paramount ME with an STL 1001E camera, so it's really a neat system. I'm using it a lot for doing calibration work, mostly MIRAs and LPV fields, but it's available for membership. And it would be nice if we had the web interface available for that, but we have limited staff and we've been concentrating on charts, so that form isn't online. But if you have a target that you want to get some data on, all you have to do is talk to me and email me and we'll get it on. And people have done that before, and we've been very receptive of that. And so it's there. It's a membership benefit, so use it. We also have a 24-inch at Mount John in the South Island of New Zealand. And that is currently being refurbished and will go online very shortly, sort of the early 2008 time frame is what I would guess. And then we have another telescope, which was the Morgan Telescope at Lowell. That has been donated to us. It's a nice 24-inch, and we're refurbishing that, and we'll have that in sight someplace and online somewhere in 2008. So there'll be this telescope, which is the 14-inch down in southern Arizona, which I've discussed before, which generates light curves like this, which is ZUMI. And this is 2 years' worth of ZUMI data, multiple filter observations. So you have blue visual R-band and I-band observations of this star, and you can see its fading episodes there, and then the big one out here that was just before our summer monsoon break. These breaks in here, because it's a circumpolar star, are not because it's going behind the sun, but because southern Arizona has a monsoon, which occurs for about 2 months of the year, in which the telescope is basically shut down. It doesn't matter whether it's Sonoida or Kitt Peak or Mount Hopkins or the Large Binocular Telescope. They all lose data during this period of time.